approval of the previous minutes. Would you like to make a motion to that effect?
A motion to second.
You need to make a motion to.
A motion.
Okay. Second?
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Okay. And we're going to get our academic and student affairs update, starting, I think, with Dr. Westbrooks, if you're.
Again, good morning, trustees. I want to start with African American Studies in the College of Arts and Sciences. Recently, the department chair, Dr. Mario Beatty, he took approximately 23 students to Egypt to study abroad this summer. And the students came back and they did a presentation to Provost Council, which was well received. So it's always wonderful when we can talk about the accomplishments of our students, because in collaboration with us, Howard University participated. And I don't know the number of students that Howard had, but it's my understanding that our students were very astute in providing history and other information relative to Egypt. Regarding biological sciences, recently, August 17th, we had our grand opening with the aquaponics facilities. Many members of the, not only the university community, but our external community were in attendance. When we look at the Department of English Communications, Media, Arts, and Theater, I always like to talk about the accomplishments of our faculty, especially when they've published books or have served as co-authors of books. So Professor Nidi Okwarafor, he recently published a book, June 1st, Who Fears Death? In addition, Dr. McFarland, he just recently finished 4 encyclopedia articles in the New Oxford Encyclopedia of Latino People. And lastly, in social work, Dr. Makiel Rashid co-authored 2 books that were released this past August. One textbook, Family Therapy, Models and Techniques, and the other one, Readings in Family Therapy, From Theory to Practice. Moving to the College of Health Sciences, we know that we recently had approved our Master's of Public Health by the Illinois Board of Higher Education. In addition, Lyons, faculty member Dr. Lyons, he recently completed a book chapter, HIV and Crystal Meth Anonymous. The other thing I wanted to point out is the department chair, Dr. Leslie Roundtree, she completed an article in the Community Practice in Occupational Therapy. And I'm also pleased to indicate that our dean, Dr. Joseph Balogun, he continues to publish. He co-authored an article, or no, he co-authored, along with Dr. Abiana, psychometric instruments designed to assess HIV risk behaviors of vulnerable populations. Moving on to grantsmanship within health sciences, the Department of Occupational Therapy recently received a scholarship for disadvantaged students, as well as supplemental funding from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act for scholarship for disadvantaged students for 2010-2011. The total amount was $68,817. Already, Dr. Balogun has started the new NEPR, and this is for our Master's in Nursing. And we foresee that we will probably present that proposal to IBHE sometime within the next 2 or 3 months. So we will have that new Master's coming on board as well. Moving to the College of Pharmacy, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education Board of Directors reaffirmed our candidacy status for our doctoral pharmacy program during its June 23rd, 2010 meeting. We anticipate a new visit in April to reaffirm our candidacy status as well. As you know, we will not be able to acquire full candidacy, full accreditation status until our first graduating class, which is in 2012. Okay. Moving to College of Education, our chair for the Library Information and Media Studies Department, Dr. John Agada, he recently co-authored a book, Assessing Information Needs and Managing Transformative Library Services. And I was really excited about this new initiative. As you know, our majors in the College of Education, they're all required to do an internship. And as part of one of the internship experiences, some of the interns went to CPS and they focused on their computer technology usage. And as a result of that, the teachers were so inspired, they asked them to come back. So CPS has now entered into an agreement with the College of Education and its interns that they will provide, I guess you would call it like tutorial services for the CPS teachers. And this will help them like enter their grades and their grade books. All of this information is online. So they're really going to help the teachers move into the 21st century in using technology as a means of complementing how we assess students in Chicago Public Schools. So we're really excited about that. We've initiated an alternative route to teacher certification at the Stagg Elementary School. And this is whereby we are going to offer our MAT, our Masters of Arts in Teaching, to more than 18 of its teachers. So I think there's this phenomenon that all of the teachers that are currently out there teaching that they're all certified. That is a myth, I want to assure you. But having alternative programs or alternative teacher cert programs will help them achieve that end. So I'm pleased that they've asked to partner with us. When we look at the graduate school, as you know, they've received a grant for $500,000 to really beef up our graduate initiatives, specifically with our graduate research initiatives with our students and faculty. So recently, they took a trip to New Orleans, whereby 25 graduate students from across the disciplines, they were able to go there and actually see firsthand the aftermaths of the disasters in New Orleans. So, and of course, our students were able to come back, interpret their experiences prior to, based on what they learned either via media, and then actually going there to see what has the government done to make the living conditions better for the residents who live there. The Honors College, we have 19 new first-time, full-time freshmen, and this is the largest number that we've had. Is an increase of approximately 33% over, 19% over last fall's class. Lastly, I'd like to talk about the Center for Teaching and Research Excellence. We had our new faculty orientation August 11th and 12th. That really went over well. And this is a great opportunity for us when we meet with the new faculty to not only talk about you know, expectations, to go over some of the contractual obligations, but also to offer assistance by way of technology. We've recently made a transition from Blackboard to Moodle, and I'm sure you've seen many of the signs that have been posted around campus, and we continue to provide the training, not only for our faculty, but our students as well. Lastly, when we talk about what's happening in academic affairs as a unit, CAP, which is Curriculum and Advising Planning Programs, which is an online system whereby students can go online as well as faculty and advisors, and they can actually see where students are within their various programs. So students will know what courses were transferred in, what courses they've completed, and what courses they have remaining prior to graduation. So all of that's online in terms of a tutorial, because what we found, the system was not being used as much because individuals didn't know how to use the system. So now a quick, easy tutorial is provided. The tutorial is online, and that tutorial will assist both students and other users. Our graduate and undergraduate catalogs are online now. You know, we used to make the printed paper copies, and we still have the evidence of the printed paper copies that have been stored in various offices, and we have cases and cases, and there's nothing we can do with them. So given that the campus is going green and we're trying to do as much as we can in the way of going paperless, we're gonna do more in putting things online, and what that does is it makes us more proficient in using what's available to us online. All of the curriculum forms are online. Recently, we loaded a directory for all of the faculty advisors. All of that is online now. It gives the name of the faculty member, office location, and the times that they are available for advising. A question was asked yesterday, Dr. Westbrook, what if they don't know who their advisor is? And I thought it was an excellent question. Well, one, the student will know what their major is. And let's say that there are three faculty members listed as advisors for that major. And I'm going to go back and reinforce this with my deans. That student can call any of those advisors. That advisor may be the appropriate advisor, he or she may not be, but they will at least be able to direct the student to either the department chair or to the correct advisor. Now, it varies across colleges. Some advisors are designated given students' last names. So A through D, one advisor may get them. E through F, another advisor may get those students. In other departments, any advisor within that discipline can advise the students. But more importantly, for the first time, we have all of the advisors loaded, all of their office hours loaded, and that is a good start. In addition, in response to students asking, who are the tutors? Where are they housed? How can we contact them? That is another thing that has been loaded on the student services page. If you go there and you click, it will provide you with a list of tutors, locations, and the office, the hours of availability. Now, that list will continue to change weekly, because what we're finding, if I get a phone call where a faculty member has identified one or two students that may need a tutor, but the discipline is not currently listed, we're reallocating dollars within the academic affairs unit to put dollars in. We're going to invest in those tutors because we're going to continue to do all that we can to retain our students. And we don't want that to be an excuse for why they did not succeed. So If a tutor is needed, all the student has to do is go to the faculty member, ask, is a tutor available? And we want them to do this after they have checked the directory, because if the tutors are already available, we want to maximize the use of the tutors that we've hired. I think that's, oh, the student side. We recently, I don't have a formal report. We have a new director for student activities. We're so pleased that he's come on board. I don't think I think I'm probably the biggest cheerleader in that department, but he's really done a phenomenal job. His name is Mr. Jason Ferguson. His assistant has been identified. He will be joining us October 1. His name is Jonathan Parks. So we will have two strong individuals who are very strong in the student affairs side, and that will help us shape the leadership perspective regarding our students as we move forward. We just had a recent delivery of programs doing welcome week. I was very pleased with the outcome. I was very pleased with the participation. And, it's just the excitement that I'm feeling that, you know, students are beginning to see that when they're requesting, what about us doing this, that their requests have been well received and put in motion. That's the conclusion of my report. Any questions?
Is there any way that there can actually be a list drawn up of all the tutoring services on campus? Like, just a generic list, anything that's already in the mainframe, and is there a possibility that as these advisors are registering students, that list can just be given to the students, probably as a form of preventative methods opposed to reactionary when they realize they need the tutoring?
Okay, first of all, the list, are you putting it up? Okay, the list is there. It's online already. And as I've indicated, we're really trying to move away from the paper. We really want students to take advantage first. You know, we used to have that saying, let your fingers do the walking. We would go to the yellow pages. Now all we have to do is a click of the button. Everything is available in advance. So if there's something that's missing, let's say your first week of classes, and you see that after you've had a chance to look at the your syllabus, the first week may not tell you that you may be having some difficulty, but maybe by week 3, you may feel that you're having some challenges. If after you've looked at the list, because it's going to always be posted before classes start, if your course or your discipline is not listed, that will be the time when you go to the faculty member, and we're hoping within a 2-week period, we will have identified a tutor. And typically, it may be someone who's really excelling, someone who's already taken the class, someone who may be in the class with you, but maybe they're doing very well. We will ask, that faculty member will contact the department chair. Department chair contacts me, and we will make certain that that tutorial service is provided to as an academic support for the student.
Okay, and is there any way, because most students don't take the extra initiative, is there any way that on where it says current students, when you go on the CSU website, can it be a drop down that just says tutoring services or something like that, or is there already one in place? Please.
And the other thing that we're doing, both with tutoring and with advising, is putting the times that the tutors and advisors are available online.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
thank you.
So
We're getting there.
So our next step is put the actual time. So the advisor is available from Tuesday, Thursday, from 2 o'clock until 4. Each one, and that will be updated by the dean's office, you know, as things change, you know. That way a student knows, okay, I can go at this time and that advisor will be there. I can go at this time and that tutor will be there. And we hope to have that up maybe within the next week.
Well, what we did is we went in and we saw that, would you say 90%? 90% of the hours are available.
Okay.
The deans have until Monday,
okay,
noon, to provide me with those items that I have no time. So they have until Monday noon. The other thing, and I give credit to Dr. Watson, he shared with me after he saw it, he said, well, how can students give feedback regarding the advising as well as the tutorial services? So the other thing, we've crafted some questions that we thought students could respond to. So it will be a comment box. The students will click and say, one, maybe the advisor wasn't available during the office hours that are posted. Or maybe I met with the advisor and they really didn't help me. I would hate that that would be one of the comments, but we need to know that. For tutorial, maybe the tutor didn't show up on time. We need to know that. So there will be like, four or five questions for each, and there will be a box. And IT is really working very closely with us, and I know that they get so many requests, but I have to give kudos to our CIO, Ms. Seacole Dillon. I don't think there's ever been a time when I haven't requested something when she hasn't. I mean, she puts it up right away. So I have to give kudos to her and her staff. So we are moving, and by Monday, we should have the remainder of those slots where the faculty members did not indicate, because the first week of classes, by contractual agreement, all faculty are to have their office hours and advising hours posted. Well, I would like to thank any faculty member that's conscientious. They know that they are advising. They've accepted the responsibilities of advising, that they would want their advisees to know when when they plan to begin advising those students. So if we don't have that contract language in there, Attorney Cage, maybe that's something we need to look at. Any questions? Any additional questions?
No, I don't have any. Thank you very much.
Conclusion of my
report. The next is a Higher Learning Commission update. Dr. Buziel. I want to say just that I was, I'm sure you're going to talk about this, but I was here yesterday for the better part of the day with the visit from the Vice President of the Higher Learning Commission, who came to talk to the various constituencies in the university about the accreditation process. And it was a very, very helpful, I thought, and very eye-opening discussion and exchange. So.
And thank you, Trustee Hill, for attending yesterday. It was great to have you, and so that you can share with the other board members at your convenience the various things that you learned on that day. But just want to report that the accreditation process at Chicago State University is alive and well. We had a little bump in the road about a year ago with the Higher Learning Commission. There was a mandated focused visit on enrollment management, and we have received the good news from the Higher Learning Commission that that report was completely successful, that our accreditation is valid through our regularly scheduled 2012-2013 comprehensive visit. So it's wonderful news, and I'm so glad that that we can move forward. And in fact, you could argue that maybe we turned some lemons into lemonade, in the sense that we got a wake-up call from the Higher Learning Commission last year. And as a result of that, I think it was a month or something, right, Dr. Westbrook, when you were interim president, you really took it upon yourself to make sure that this process moved forward. And so you, Dr. Westbrooks, pulled together a task force on enrollment management in preparation for writing the report to the HLC in response to that. When Dr. Watson took the helm, he didn't miss a step either. He really encouraged and was extremely helpful in moving the process forward. Well, now that that's out of the way, that task force has, for want of a better word, morphed into the steering committee for the comprehensive visit. We took those individuals and added others, so it's now it's about 20 individuals, including the co-chairs of the committees that are going to address the criterions for accreditation. So since our last meeting on June 25th, we have held in this room a retreat, July 8th and 9th, actually, Trustee Hill, you were there too, to discuss core values, vision, mission, and strategic goals. We had 70 the first day and 50 the second day of faculty, administrators, and staff who attended this retreat. Dr. Mulligan will speak more about that in his report. We discussed mission, core values, vision, and strategic goals. We have, like I said, the steering committee has increased to not only include the members of the task force that addressed enrollment management, but also the co-chairs of the criterion committees, and those co-chairs have been attending regularly. We meet every Friday, 2 to 3, as many hours as it takes, keeping that regular date open so that we always have a deadline. We have homework assignments, we prepare for these meetings, and we make a lot of progress at these meetings. As far as advertising this effort to the university community, we have what's called an accreditation channel on Cougar Connect. Cougar Connect is a great portal. I don't know if you're aware of it, but it's becoming more and more used. It's an opportunity, it's a way for members of the university community to learn about events that are taking place at the university. And we as individuals have the right to make channels. And so what we're doing is, as information about accreditation comes forward, that gets posted on the Cougar Connect channel. And so for instance, yesterday's event was posted, the advertisement was posted there, and I'm sure that that helped in getting a good attendance. We also have a special group within Cougar Connect just for the steering committee. So that gives us the beginnings of a virtual library for accreditation. You know, when you have a complicated process like accreditation, the last thing you want is emails flying around, right? You could easily, you know, forget when that email was sent. Was it June, July? Well, no, we don't have to worry about that. We certainly send the emails, but we also have a virtual clearinghouse of documents, the hundreds and maybe even more thousands of documents that will be required for accreditation will initially be stored in Cougar Connect and eventually in other places. But for right now, we've got a place where our steering committee members can go and access all their documents wherever they are, whenever they need to. And that's really that's a real plus. We've already discussed among ourselves in the steering committee the criteria for accreditation. We've established a template and a timeline for the criterion committees to collect their data. Right now, we're in the process of identifying what data needs to be collected. And on October 4th, we already have our first deadline, the committees will be reporting to the steering committee. And we will begin then the process of actually collecting that data. As Trustee Hill mentioned, yesterday was what we call the campus-wide kickoff of the comprehensive self-study. We had meetings all morning with various constituencies, including the President's Executive Council, the HLC Steering Committee. The assessment coordinators met with the Vice President of the High Learning Commission and learned a lot about how assessment is woven into all of the criteria for accreditation. And we also met with the criterion committees. After a short break, then we moved over to the Jones Center, and I would say about 200, 250 people were there to listen to a very extensive presentation by Karen Solomon, where she just went through the whole nine yards about what accreditation is about and what we're going to have to do. It's a daunting task. We have 2 years to do it, but we have to keep going. We've already made some progress, but we need to keep going on that. Last is that we're so confident that what we are doing is valuable that we are going to propose that we give a presentation next April to the Higher Learning Commission's annual convention meeting to discuss how we addressed our focus visit at Chicago State and use that energy to prepare, help to help prepare for the preparation for the accreditation visit in 2013. I think we have a story to tell here, and I was at the conference last year. There were very few minority institutions presenting there, and I think that we're going to serve an important role there. That's all I have to say. We move forward, but we've done a lot, and next time we meet, I hope we'll have a similarly full report for you.
Great.
Okay. Any questions?
I thought I would share my observations that I shared with the larger group yesterday, which is, it is a daunting task. Everybody in this room is fully aware of how important the accreditation process is. It's one of the very fundamental things that this university does, not just because we have to, in a sense, but because not just about compliance. And there are some aspects of that. I mean, I think we know we need to address whatever issues were raised in the 2003 visit, as well as any outstanding issues from the focus visit. But as you listen to what the accreditation process is all about, it's really much more about the future than the past. It's not about what we've done, but about where we're going and how we're going to get there. And it's, in a lot of senses, very aspirational. And this is a time when the university really gets to take a step back out of our incredibly busy lives and say, are we doing what we should be doing? Are we doing it well? And how are we going to change those things? So one thing that was real clear to me was that it's about the future.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that was clear to me, and maybe this is obvious, but in every discussion that Dr. Solomon had yesterday, every question is all focused on student learning. So it's not facilities for the sake of facilities. It's not evaluation of admissions processes for the sake of admission. It's all focused on student learning. Defining what the outcomes are that we expect of our students, sort of what makes them a CSU student and graduate, and then being able to measure that and demonstrate it, that we're doing it. And so that's a lens. It's sometimes tempting to think, I just can get by here. But if we're not asking ourselves those fundamental questions about how is this supporting student learning, then I think we haven't done our job. And then the third lens that I would encourage everybody to look at this process through is from the perspective of what's my stake. And not just because we are all stakeholders, we're all part of this process. And not just what is my stake, but how can I contribute? Because this is an opportunity that we get every 10 years at this point to really participate in this, to rethink what we're doing. And the university is not this building or some set of abstract programs. It's the people here, and it's the people here that define that every day. So I really encourage everybody to be involved, to keep up to date, to understand what the process is, to contribute to it, because it's vitally, vitally important.
Thank you.
Great, thank you very much. Dr. Mulugeta?
Thank you. I'm here to present an update on strategic planning. As Dr. Musiel reported, the HLC Steering Committee and the Criteria Committees, as well as faculty and staff, had a retreat on July 8th and 9th to discuss core values, vision, mission, and strategic goals. On the first day, the focus was on core values, vision, and mission. And on the second day, retreat participants were asked to join their respective, pre-assigned breakout groups to review the 2006 strategic plan, pick the top three major strategic goals from the 2006 plan, identify new goals, and make a recommendation of major strategic goals. Each of the four breakout groups recommended 4 to 6 major strategic goals listed on the pages of the July 8th and 9th retreat document included in the folder of information for this meeting. We have begun to solicit feedback from the university community on core values, vision, mission, and strategic goals recommended by the retreat groups. And the strategic planning committee, which will be formed shortly, is expected to consider the major strategic goals recommended by the retreat groups in developing a new strategic plan for CSU. The HLC steering committee has compiled a list of over 40 names recommended by the various units of the university to be considered by President Watson in forming the strategic planning committee. The list has been submitted to President Watson. Any questions?
What is the sort of the schedule and the timing for refining and finalizing the plan?
Well, President Watson has a list, and he's
not just the list, but what is, you know, we started
the time frame.
Sometime when is the goal to finish the plan? So next summer, next is that?
I think by the end of springtime.
Okay. And what is your thinking about how to share the process and the seek input and consideration by the Board of Trustees?
Well, at this stage, we have started, presenting the core values, mission, vision, and strategic goals approved by the retreat to the university community. Like, for instance, we are on the agenda of the Faculty Senate for October 5, and we are going to share with them and then ask for their feedback. And in fact, today we have an appointment with the IT people to determine how we can, in fact, solicit feedback through Cougar Connect. And we are of the opinion that is probably the right way of doing it.
Trustee Hill, we have to ensure that we have strategies to reach out to all of our stakeholders, and the trustee members represent a very key stakeholder, as you know. So those strategies have to be discussed and put in place. So we will be back to you on that. Those strategies are not in place right now to ensure that strategically each stakeholder, from the community to the faculty to the Board of Trustee members, et cetera, are reached out to and we get their input.
Right. I think it is helpful. I mean, part of the value of doing a plan is the discussion that happens and the trade-offs that people discuss and the priorities and the sharing of ideas, the making sure that everybody has a common view of our current situation. And those kind of, so if it waits until, you know, everybody's sort of reviewed and approved it, then I think you've really shortchanged the board and the university in those processes. So there needs to be some time for the board to review and discuss and have direct discussion and input with the folks who are working on this daily.
One thing we can do is, the steering committee will review the core values, mission, vision, and strategic goals using feedback from the university community. As soon as we do that, we will submit the comments by the steering committee to the president and the strategic planning, committee.
In other words, Trustee Hill, since you are a member of the steering committee, you would have an opportunity to see whatever is going out. You will get a chance to see it first to provide feedback as a member of the steering committee before anything is sent to the university committee.
But what I'm hearing is that, and what I believe is that it is better for us to get the Board of Trustees' input at a much sooner date. In other words, not after it goes to the Faculty Senate, not after it goes to right.
I mean, if there are...
Things can run on parallel tracks.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I haven't really had much of a chance to discuss this with the other board members, but I can imagine that board members might have some ideas about issues that need to be very high in the discussion that might not even enter into some of the discussions that are being had. And it just doesn't make any sense to me to sort of get to, this board is not a rubber stamp, as I hope is apparent. And that's not the role and certainly that's not an appropriate role when it comes to strategy. And the board ultimately is responsible for the strategy. The president is responsible for recommending that strategy. So, I think I've explained. I don't think I need to say anymore.
We are going to have some discussions, and I will get back to the board, and we will put some strategies in place to ensure that all stakeholders, and especially the board, has input at a much earlier date in the process to ensure that we get the value of the input of the board before, as they say, before the cake is done.
Great.
And then we ask you.
Yeah. You know, if we're going to put blueberries in it, let us put some blueberries in it before it gets too soft.
That's right. We want some blueberries and some cranberries.
By the way, there are lots of blueberries in those muffins. It's
okay.
Very good today.
Good analogy.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have an enrollment update?
Dr. Green? Is Pat here?
Good morning, trustees. My name is Cherise Sidney. I'm the Director of Enrollment Management, and I report directly to Mr. Andre Bell, who's the Vice President of Enrollment Management.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Green, Dean of the Freshman Year Experience, and I also report directly to Mr. Andre Bell.
Our report today is on enrollment and retention. I believe the board has received a report from Mr. Bell dated August 30th. The numbers that I give you today will actually be from the census data from September 10th. So they will vary. They will be different. We are pleased to announce that Chicago State University's overall enrollment is up by 1.8% and that the undergraduate enrollment is up by 5.1%. However, we do know we have experienced a decrease in two areas, as many state universities have. Our decrease comes with first-time full-time freshmen and graduate enrollment. First-time full-time freshmen, we had a decrease of 12.9%, and graduate enrollment decreased 8.2%. I would like to put some perspective around the decrease on first-time full-time freshmen by stating, number one, first-time full-time freshmen make up only 8% of CSU's overall student population. The other caveat around that is, even though those numbers decreased, our enrollment for fall 2010 for first-time full-time freshmen is the second highest since 2005 and the third highest in the last 10 years. Some critical factors that have been identified as a contributor to our decreased enrollment are the economy and negative and/or false press. While we've identified those two factors, we know that there may be other factors, and a committee has been convened to identify, address, and analyze those issues. In terms of our retention numbers, under Dr. Green, do you want to?
The freshman retention rate, I'm very pleased to announce, has increased by 3.4%. over last year's rate. Last year's rate was 57.7%, and this year's retention rate for first-time full-time freshmen is now 61.1%. CSU has not had an enrollment in the 60th percentile for retention of freshmen in the last 10 years.
Something's working.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Are there any questions?
How is the early warning system working this year?
We're just finalizing the reports from the faculty. The data is due today, so we haven't actually received it yet. We should have that report, I'm sure, by the end of the day. The faculty have to input the data on the freshmen, and so once I receive my segment of it, we will break it down. We would do massive outreach, follow-up, and intervention with the freshmen based on the type of data we receive as it refers to either class attendance or academic performance on exams and quizzes. And so we're just ready to act on the data as soon as we receive it. It's a critical piece of information in terms of driving our efforts to retain the freshmen.
The early
and other students at large.
The early warning system is for everything from freshmen through the senior level students. Mm-hmm. So it is something that Dean Green is involved in, but each one of our respective deans are involved in to ensure that those sophomores, juniors, and seniors are also reached. And Provost Westbrooks has really garnered quite a bit of energy and quite a bit of resources to ensure that every 4 weeks we are very surgical and very exacting as to how we reach out and get every student that we can. Provost, is there anything that we missed on that? Okay.
I would just like to commend you all on the fact that I don't know if it's been at least a year, but a lot of students have actually been grateful you all had implemented starting to call students. That hadn't been done before, so students who are on an academic warning, they actually get a phone call where you're offered, you know, it's offered tutoring services, you can come in and talk about it, and they actually have a strategy where they help students to get back on track. And personally, I've noticed that really making a difference and students actually appreciating that, so thank you.
That's that part of our mission when we say we engage. we reach out and get and engage them. And we reach out through not only calling them, but we send emails to them. We send letters. We ultimately will go to the actual classroom of a student. So if we start out with 600 students and if 550 respond to the emails, the phone calls, and et cetera. At the end of a week's or 2 weeks period of time, if 50 have not responded, our deans, and I'm looking at a couple of them now, they will then have their respective, or sometimes even them, they will go to the actual classroom and say, why have you not responded? And that gets people's attention. And our faculty have been very cooperative with us. Our faculty. We will sometimes give envelopes to our faculty, and our faculty will you know, talk with the students, say, hey, you're not responding. You know, you have been identified as someone who's had some challenges in one of these three areas. So it's a wide array of individuals and techniques that we utilize. Last thing I want to say, and it was something that came up earlier, we need to get our students to we need to change the culture, and it's not just our students, it's our administrators, it's our staff, and it's our faculty. And the culture we need to change is utilizing our emails or utilizing our portal. C. Cole, could you very briefly address that as to what we want students to be able to do on a daily basis? And
I'm sure you know Trustee Hill, but I'm C. Cole Dillon. What we have done for students is create what we call a single sign-on community in our portal. So the expectation for every student to be connected and informed is to log into the portal every day. And at the top of the portal, you'll see an email icon. And if you just click on that icon, it will automatically log you into your email to see whatever messages have been sent. so that you know what's going on. So what we've tried to do for students is to make it as easy as possible for them to understand. And we are also working on additional technology to supplement what's being done by the freshman experience and the faculty and the deans, which is we're working on implementation of a program called Signals, where the student will actually see, when they log into the course management system, a graphic, a stoplight that tells them how well they're doing. So if they are needing intervention, they'll get a red light. If they are getting a warning, they'll get a yellow light. And if they're doing really well, they'll get a green light. And we're looking forward to having that implemented for the spring term.
See, because with the more we get students to, on a daily basis, just push that button and look at their portal, they will see when their reimbursement checks are due. They will see when there's any alert taking place on campus that they need to be aware of. So it needs, and that's a cultural change, you know. And we're slowly moving towards that. We're asking the faculty to encourage the students. We, the administration, are encouraging them. But that, and then we're also asking student government to speak, you know. So it's a cultural change that's slowly taking place.
Trustee Kerr, I would like to thank you for your comment, and I would also like to expand the president's remark with regard to students who are in academic difficulty. We've made two significant changes in their process, and one that I think that you alluded to. One is that this summer, for the first time, we contacted every student who was on academic probation, and we allowed them to enroll in a summer study skills project. And as a result of that specialized effort, we were able to have students come and complete the effective study program, receive a certificate, and we had over 70 students complete that process this summer, so that when the fall semester starts, they are back on good academic standing and ready to advance forward in their studies. The second thing that we did for the first time was that the academic probation meetings used to be held in a group setting. And as a result of my review, we changed that process, and now we have broken that down to one-on-one sessions so that students are more able to express more fully exactly what their issues and problems are in a confidential setting, and then the advisor can direct them to the appropriate resources, and we too have gotten very positive feedback about that, so I appreciate your acknowledgement of that.
Yeah, it's so important because the program you all did over the summer, a lot of times the reason we have issues with retention is because once a student gets on academic probation, they don't feel they can come back from it, and that's a result that that results in them dropping out. Mm-hmm. So that's almost like that second chance and that extra push that our students need to feel like they can continue their matriculation. So thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the update. The last remaining matter on our agenda is public and employee comments. Are there any public and employee comments this morning?
No. The coach told me.
Hearing none, I will entertain a motion to adjourn. You want to move that we adjourn?
I want to move.
Okay. A second?
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
We stand adjourned. And I think the next meeting is at 10.